Welcome back. I'm Michael Cohen. You are listening to 1320 WILS. Well, a new study out of Michigan State University, which appears on in the recent issue of the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, focusing on the effect of the eating habits of low-income families, particularly how mothers impact their children's eating habits. Sharon Hare is an MSU professor of human nutrition. She joins me now to reveal what was discovered. Sharon, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you for having me.
You know, we hear so much about the poor American diet, fast food, and way too many calories. Do low-income families typically have a much less healthy diet than those in the middle class?
Not to my knowledge. Only about 3% of the U.S. population overall, regardless of income, meet the recommended dietary guidelines for different food groups. Almost everyone is getting plenty of protein, because protein is found, of course, not only in meat, fish, and poultry, but also in milk and cheese and legumes and nuts. There are some distinct differences in diets between lower and middle income families. There tends to be less fresh fruit and vegetables in lower-income families. And less whole grains and sometimes less low-fat products.
Does it usually come down to money, then? Is that the reason why some of these fresh and very healthy foods are not being eaten by these low-income families?
Yes, money is certainly an issue, but I want to emphasize you can still get plenty of nutrients out of frozen, canned, and dried and juiced fruits and vegetables. So I think it's a misunderstanding on the part of the public that things like raisins aren't adequate substitutes for grapes, and raisins are a whole lot cheaper than fresh grapes, that tomato juice isn't an adequate substitute for fresh tomatoes, although it does tend to be a lot higher in sodium. And certainly frozen vegetables and fruits are highly nutritious as well.
Now, let's talk about this new study. You were focusing on the mother's eating habits and how it's impacting the children. What exactly were you looking at, and what did you discover?
Well, I've been interested in low-income women for 20-some years. And in order to be in touch with the women, I had to also look at their children's diets. And so I've been looking at their diets for some time. When I went to the research literature, it was somewhat surprising to find that there is a lack of research consensus on what are the best feeding practices. And I was privileged to work with a dietitian and a child development specialist at the Baylor College of Medicine, and picked up some skills in this area. And so with their collaboration, I found most of the research in the area has been strictly with middle-income families, not low-income, and has focused on feeding control, food restriction, pressure to eat, and rewarding with foods. And some of the early work I did a few years ago suggested that there were some important different feeding practices in all families, but especially in limited income, and that the food environment is a way that parents can exert some control, but it's not in a aggressive fashion. So it's not sitting down to a family meal at a table or in the living room and saying that Joe, the basketball player, can have this food, and Sally, the overweight adolescent or overweight preschooler, cannot have this food.
Aren't typically, though, the mothers and their children, aren't they all eating essentially the same type of food?
About 50%, it looks like. There is certainly a relationship between what the parents and children are eating, but it's not 100%. The parents obviously aren't getting alcohol. Well, I hope they're not getting alcohol and some of the more adult beverages. But And the parents tend to eat less fresh fruit than the children. So in some ways, younger children have somewhat better diets than their parents. They drink more milk and they get more fruit.
You're talking about these in low-income families, children actually end up having a healthier diet than their own parents.
Sometimes, yes.
Is that due to the school lunches they're eating, or how are they getting this food?
I don't know that exactly. That's a good question. I think it is that parents see milk too often as a food for small children, but not for adults. And some adults lose the ability to digest the milk sugar and may lose their taste preference for it. And they see fruit juice and fruits as healthy, so they're sure that their children get them. But it is surprising to me that the mothers often don't get them. Only 40% of adult women of all income levels get just one serving of fruit a day.
I'm talking to Sharon Hare, an MSU professor of human nutrition, about her new study of how low-income mothers, the diets they eat, how it affects and impacts their children. So what is the bottom line, that if a mother, a low-income mother, is eating an unhealthy diet, her children will be essentially doing the same thing usually?
Yes, and I want to be clear that this was a study. We didn't look at it was not a longitudinal study. So we found associations between what the mothers were eating and doing and their children's diets, but we can't say without a study over time that one caused the other. So we were finding that mothers who modeled eating fruits and vegetables and who had them in the home had children with more of these servings in their diets. We found that parents who modeled soft drinks and chips and had these items in their home had children with less healthy diets as well.
Well, what about fast food? Do low-income families typically eat a lot more of this fast food than those in the middle and upper class?
I don't have those data at my fingertips. I don't think that's necessarily true. I think middle-income families probably eat the most fast food when you get two parents working outside the home. There's just a limited amount of time to prepare foods, unfortunately. And fast food diets don't have to be of poor diet quality, but unfortunately that tends to be what people choose the most.
I want to shift the questioning slightly. When you look at our dietary problems here in the U.S., and actually resolving them in the long run, does it not appear that ultimately if there is cheap and unhealthy food available to the public, that those who are low income and middle income will be gravitating towards it?
Absolutely, overall. I mean, even laboratory rats, when they're offered a choice between chips and sweet beverages and sweet desserts versus a healthy rat chow diet, will pick the unhealthy one, the less healthy one.
Is it fair to say, too, that with all the knowledge we've already gained and we're likely to gain moving ahead and as to how unhealthy and ultimately deadly this food is, that is not likely going to change eating habits for the masses?
Repeat the question.
Well, we've certainly learned a lot about how unhealthy and the long-term physical effects eating this unhealthy American diet can be. Do you agree that even with all this knowledge and the public understanding the ramifications, that it's not really leading to any real change in how we eat?
The knowledge of what's healthy and unhealthy isn't leading to any change. I think it's led to some changes, and I think there have been some changes in the food industry, especially when there are policies that are adopted either voluntarily or by legislation. There is a voluntary reduction of sodium by the food industry now in a lot of foods, but we need salt, and we're born with a taste preference for it. So as long as highly palatable and not nutrient-dense foods are available, humans are going to continue to choose them, regardless of what most humans will choose them, and even regardless of what the science says.
Do you think we could be moving to a time and place when the food that we're now consuming will be declared a public hazard, like smoking, and will be forced out of the marketplace?
It has happened in some localities to some specific foods, at least restricting them to children, and in some countries. Whether it happens here, I don't care to. It's impossible for anyone to forecast, probably. But it'll be interesting to watch to see what happens over the next decade or so.
Well, New York City, I know, is planning to now ban these large sodas and other sugary drinks.
Super size, yes.
Is that a policy that you think is the way to go when it comes to getting a handle on these things?
As of today and what I've seen, I would personally endorse that policy. If you asked me that 10 or 20 years ago, I would not have. But I've come around to thinking that's a positive step, yes.
So finally, when it comes to the study and what you discovered here, I mean, is the thing to take away from others that your diet and how you eat will have an impact, maybe even for a lifetime, on how your children eat?
Well, I can't say it for a lifetime because I haven't looked, but there are studies that strongly suggest that, and it certainly has an impact on what children eat in the short term while they're at home. Not only that, it has an impact on their taste preferences. So if they see parents or older siblings willing to try new foods, they see that becomes a normative behavior in the household, and the child is more willing to mimic the older sibling or the parent. So, yes.
One last thing. When you look at the diets we eat and all the different categories, the sugary drinks, the fatty, starchy foods, is there one in particular that you point to and you think, wow, this is really the first thing we need to remove from the American diet?
I don't think we are born, our body needs simple sugars to function, but we do not need them in excess, and we can manufacture them from other dietary elements, protein and fats. I came across a piece of historical trivia that said, it was written by one of the founding fathers, that said, nowhere is it deemed necessary that alcohol, tobacco, and sugar are needed or necessary for human life, and therefore they are all appropriate targets for taxation. And this was written by the founding fathers several hundred years ago. And indeed, we do tax alcohol and tobacco, but have not yet taxed sugar.
I see. Cutting down on sugar would probably be a good first step for anyone.
I think it's a very good step. Simply added sugars. I mean, there's natural sugars in dairy and in fruit, but I'm talking about the added sugars.
Sharon Hare, MSU Professor of Human Nutrition. Sharon, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you for inviting me.
And we're coming right back. I'm Michael Cohen. This is 1320 WILS.